Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 8 of the Ball 5 podcast, the podcast that is officially back once again. We took a bit of a brief hiatus for the holiday season. I'm going to say it's for the holiday season and not that just we kind of forgot and then life took a hold, because of a reason that I'll let my co-host Chris Lopes explain another reason why we had to take a brief hiatus. Also, I'm DJ Lopes.
Yeah, I also had a kid, so yeah. That takes some time, and that actually, DJ had asked me to do the record just to kind of step into the window here today, break the fourth wall, as they say, asked me to record, and I looked at my clock, and I realized I finished my chores, and I was in a decent spot at, like, 9:30, so here we're recording then, so this type of stuff happens, you know?
Yeah, more importantly, sorry, I thought you were done, I'm a two-time uncle. Which is, I think, the bigger lead here, yeah, is that I'm really climbing my way up the power rankings in the uncle. I'm becoming more powerful with each passing kid. But yeah, of course, congratulations to you and Allie, two great people. And I've met Arthur. Arthur is a wonderful guy. And yeah, I'm very excited. But enough about your personal life and how awesome it is and everything like that. We got baseball to talk about. Yeah. In that couple weeks that was past, we had a lot of stories, some little, some big, some, like, absolutely what the fuck is going on, which we'll all get to. But first, I think we're going to start, I'm just going to run through some of the small deals that I remember happening, and then I'm going to have you point out which one you think is, like, the bigger one, and then I guess we'll go on from there. So, the five signings that I picked out that I remember is Justin Turner to the Boston Red Sox. I believe that's 2 years, 1 year, and an option. Nate Eovaldi to the Texas Rangers. I think that was a 3-year deal. Michael Conforto to the Giants. J.D. Martinez to the Dodgers. And Brandon Drury to the Angels. I had the Sean Murphy trade to the Braves here, and him getting an extension for $7 an hour. But that kind of feels like it would be the obvious pick, so I'll push that down. Out of the five signings, which one do you kind of have thoughts about?
Yeah, so if we don't include Sean Murphy here, you know, I would love to talk about Michael Conforto, but I'm not going to because I think that's really just kind of a, whatever. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I love Michael, so there's that.
So much he's on a first-name basis with him.
Michael, yeah, Michael. Scooter, as they say. But I really think the big one here is going to be the Nathan Eovaldi to Texas, just because it really rounds out their rotation. They have, I know that a lot of things have been saying, like, their rotation is really, really, really good, and it is really good, but I also think it's one of those sneaky, really good rotations, you know? It's just, it's pretty deep. They have a lot of those guys that are, you know, going to go out there and you know, I don't know, pitch really well. And I think that it's a lot of those guys that you look at a team and you're like, maybe they're not the best pitcher on their team, but they're definitely like the second best pitcher, you know? And it's like 1 through 5 is that type of guy, you know. Well, other than Jacob deGrom, who's probably the best pitcher in the world. But I don't know. I'm a big pitching person and I really like Texas's rotation right now.
Yeah, I mean, so with their rotation, I think a lot of it is kind of based on how you feel their health is going to look like this year, which, I mean, you can say that about literally any rotation in baseball, but it feels especially prescient with them because you have guys like Jacob deGrom who, as we've learned, you know, over the last couple of years, you know, if you get 20 to 25 starts out of him, that kind of feels like you're getting more than you paid for. Obviously, when he's out there, he's probably the greatest pitcher on planet Earth. But like I just said, you're probably looking at maybe 20 to 25 starts in a good year at this point in his career. But then you're also looking at Andrew Haney, who has really picked it up last year with the Dodgers, but did also have some health issues. And Eovaldi, we did see his velo kind of start to dip when he returned from the IL for Boston last year. He kind of looked like he was starting to lose it, but he's still a really good pitcher. He's been around that 3.7 in the ERA, you know, category for the last couple of years, was an all-star in 2021. Just a really quality starter. He's going to be about Maybe at the highest end of two in that rotation, probably more of like a three or a four, you know, around that level with John Gray and Martin Perez. So I think he's kind of perfect for what that role is now. And I still think there's some question marks about their bullpen. We don't fully know what that's going to look like. There's still some stuff around the offense that's a little iffy. I think they have a lot of really good pieces, obviously. Corey Seager and Marcus Semien. Adolis Garcia was really good again this year. And then Nathaniel Lowe has just been quietly one of the best first baseman in baseball for the last 2 years. So I think the offense is slowly starting to find their way into becoming a great offense, and making this rotation way better than it was last year is going to really start putting them in conversations for the wild card. Probably still not the division with the Astros, but definitely still the wild card. And one thing I do like about Nathan Eovaldi, and this has been made a point of by multiple other podcasts, is that he's a big playoff guy. You know, one of my biggest memories of Nathan Eovaldi, and one of a lot of people's biggest memories of Nathan Eovaldi, was when he pitched six innings out of the bullpen in that crazy 18-inning Dodgers game. You know, he took the loss in that game, but it didn't feel like he deserved it, and it's definitely what got him his contract extension with Boston in the first place in 2018. So he was just super high quality. He pitched a great game in the AL wildcard game in 2021. He's just a guy that when the playoffs are on and you need innings, you need a guy that's going to go out there and give his all and give you a chance to win in the playoffs. He's the kind of guy you want. And I think that that's going to be huge.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we'll get into the Sean Murphy trade on its own, because I'm just actually kind of remembering. This is once again just a sign of how long it's been since we've actually recorded. I'm just kind of remembering how crazy that deal was, because it was a three-team deal. William Contreras was suddenly traded to the Brewers, who weren't even initially in this trade when it broke. I believe it was just, you know, the Braves have traded for Oakland Athletics catcher Sean Murphy. And it kind of just ended with Oakland leaving the deal like, but why did we do that? They got basically Astori Ruiz, they got Kyle Muller. I think they got a couple other pieces, but I'm not, I haven't looked at all the players in the trade yet. But the Brewers get William Contreras, and all they really had to give up was Astori Ruiz. And then, like we just mentioned, the Braves get Sean Murphy and sign him for, I believe it was a 6-year, $75 million deal, which, I mean, so, okay, we do this thing about how the Braves basically, you know, are extorting their players so that they can give them cheap deals. But I will say, like, sometimes I think we overrate the players in the context of these deals. Like, I still think Sean Murphy's a very, very good catcher and a very high-quality bat. He's a solid catcher, but, you know, I don't think on the open market he's getting, like, 10 years, 150 mil or something yeah. like that. Like, he's not getting, like, a deal that's too much crazier than what he got from the Braves, but it's also just the fact that it was the Braves, and this is the 9th, 10th player that they've already done this with. So yeah. it was just more annoying than anything. But I mean, yeah, it was kind of a situation where you thought like, oh, they already have a catcher. Why would they do that deal? But then you realize like, well, of course you'd rather have a guy like Sean Murphy than a guy like Travis d'Arnaud.
Yeah. And I think the big thing about the Braves deals, and we'll probably talk about in context with at least one of the other topics that we'll hit on later on, and then if we bring up Brian Reynolds, I'll talk about it a little bit more too. But I think the contracts, the biggest stem is the $1 million always being signed or donated to the Atlanta Braves Foundation. That feels the cheesiest out of it, but
that's like when you graduate college and then your college hits you up with like, by the way, we have our day of giving coming up. If you don't think you've already given enough to this university, we could take a couple extra bucks.
We'll donate money in your honor.
But yeah, so you did actually just mention Brian Reynolds, and I think I'll use that as a jumping off point to that where. So I still don't think there's going to get a deal done. I think I saw in the MLB article I looked at to kind of do a little bit of prep for this pod that Ken Rosenthal reported that there are teams interested, but they said something of like it'd take like a Juan Soto type package, which is, I mean, don't get me wrong, I really like Brian Reynolds, but that is, like, a lot. And especially, you know, there are factors for it. It's basically just saying they don't want to trade him. They want to try to figure this out. He is a quality player with, I think it's, like, 2 or 3 years of control left. But, I mean, I still think that that's probably not, he's probably not somebody I'd be giving up the whole entire farm for. And he, the rumored offer that was given to him was 6 years, 75 mil. Which, you know, obviously, especially in the context of the Pirates who haven't given out these big deals, we mentioned a couple episodes ago that when we were talking about Brian Reynolds, that the previous highest one was Cabrian Hayes. And I think that was like 5 years, 70 mil, something to that effect. So, I mean, they are pretty low deals, but I was thinking about what you would do for a Brian Reynolds deal, and I saw it was one of those, like, flirting versus harassment memes, and it was, like, the Ronald Acuna Jr. 8 years, 100 mil deal was the flirting, and the Brian Reynolds 6 years, 75 mil was their harassment deal, which was kind of funny, but also, like, we clowned the Acuna deal when it happened, too. We thought that that was a dumb underpay as well. But I kind of feel like when I was thinking about what you would do for his kind of contract, what I would consider doing, I was thinking around that, 8-100 area, probably bump it up to like 8-120, 130-ish. But yeah, I think that that's around his market. So, and I also think that the Pirates should be more than comfortable giving that to him with what he would probably mean for the next level of this franchise.
Yeah, I'm really upset that you said that, because that's exactly the thing that I was going to bring up, was that exact meme. Because it is funny, though, because it's basically saying that, like, you know, the Braves are kind of lauded for this, and then everyone else kind of looks at this as an embarrassment, and how could you ever offer Brian Reynolds this type of contract? Like you're saying, like, acting as if he is going to be the next Juan Soto or something along those lines. Although I guess he's not really the next Juan Soto, because Juan Soto is what, probably like 5 years younger than him at this point, you know. But
also any... Juan Soto is like leagues above.
Well, that's what I mean. So... you know, it's like you're not going to go. I think exactly what you're saying. That 8 years, 100 mil, probably like you said, that 120 just to kind of amp it up. To kind of, I don't know, cost of living rates and stuff like that. But you know what I mean? Like it's just one of those things where I think that that's probably the range of the more respectable offer that you would give him, or that's an offer that I think another team that is more readily available to do those types of offers. That's probably what the market value for Brian Reynolds is. But It is interesting. I do think, with all of that said, you know, offering 6 for 75 is pretty crappy, though. You know, like, it's not, I think for the caliber of player that he is, I don't think it's a great one. Especially, you know, I would like to see that 8 to 100.
Especially when that's your offer coming off of him requesting a trade.
Yeah.
Like, he's already come out and basically, you know, said, obviously didn't say this in like an interview or anything, but by all accounts of reporting, has said, like, if you're not going to come with me seriously about a deal, then don't come to me, just trade me. And their reaction to that was, best we can do is a little over 10 mil a year. That's, you're pushing our hand here, Brian. But yeah, so I don't know. I also feel like my gauge for what market value is anymore has kind of just been so skewed by some recent spending. And not to say that it's spending way too much, but also, like, multiple 30-year-old shortstops have gotten 11-year deals in the last year, which is kind of crazy to me. Yeah. So, yeah, I think that does it on our little, like, smaller and, you know, transactions. So the first story I wanted to get into, that we don't have to go too deep into it, because I don't want to rehash this, because I think that he's just a bad person, and I don't want to get too deep into the details, because I don't want to have to keep relitigating this story, relitigating this memory. But Trevor Bauer was recently reinstated, and this was something that, like, when the suspensions kept happening and they kept getting pushed back in indefinite statuses, I just kind of thought, like, cool, maybe I'll just, like, not have to think about Trevor Bauer again. And then his whole stuff got pushed up. He got reinstated. And then all the stuff with the Dodgers happened. I think they had considered bringing him back, but eventually, on January 6th, eventually released him. And then, I don't know. Like I said, I just think he's just a bad person. And the suspension is exactly what he deserved. I don't know. I don't think that he should pitch for another team in the league. And I guess the question is that, do we think another team will give him a shot? Because I see all these tweets as like, Astros fans tweeting, well, we're already the bad guys, might as well go ahead and sign Trevor Bauer and stuff like that. And it's like, that's not the mindset you guys should have. You guys, because like, there's a difference between being like, oh, the bad guys, we banged on some trash cans, and oh, the bad guys, we signed Trevor Bauer, you know, some guy with an actual, like, you know, history with sexual assault and these allegations and stuff like that. So like, that's like a completely different thing, and I don't know if teams should be like taking that lightly, but I also don't trust the morals of a lot of these teams that try to look for wins and easy business more than they kind of do, you know, looking out for them, their female employees, their female fans, and all that. And, you know, I don't know. It's just a tough situation where, me personally, I don't think he should throw another pitch in the MLB, but I don't trust MLB and MLB owners and teams to be on my side on that.
Yeah, 100%. I'm in the same boat. I obviously don't believe that he should, you know, ever pitch again. But I would put money that he will. They don't think he's going to pitch this year. I don't think that a team is going to go after him, but I bet you he's going to do, you know, some type of posting videos of his workouts, because he already has been, you know, posting video of his workouts and doing those types of things. And some team is going to sign him for a 1-year reclamation contract next year or something like that. And then he just has to get paid out. I forget, if someone signs him, do they just sign him to a new deal, or?
Yeah, I think it's a new deal. I think regardless, the Dodgers have to pay him out. I think I read it was like $22.5 million this year.
Okay. Anyways,
which crazy punishment? Yeah, congrats, exactly. You had all this happen to you. Your punishment is that we're going to pay you $22.5 million to not be with us this year.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I just think, you know, it's unfortunate. With players of his caliber, because we can't, you know, not state that he is a good pitcher, you know. So with players of his caliber in other leagues, we've seen it, you know, NFL is a big one where I feel like this happens every single time, every season. And then you always have someone who just goes on another team and plays really well, and then they forget about it. You know, I think of your, Tyreek Hills and stuff like that. And I think that, Trevor Bauer is kind of in that caliber of player, to that type of position. And so I really do think that you're going to see him on a team, maybe not this year, but probably next year. And then it's just going to be kind of a hand washing. And I don't want to say NFL, like throwing NFL under the bus. MLB has done this. You know, you have your Jose Reyeses and Aroldis Chapmans, and there's a really big list of, unfortunately, of names that have been, you know, thrown around because of their usefulness to a team, that still have kind of shitty pasts like that, you know. I really hope that Trevor Bauer doesn't, but I have to say that he's going to at some point. I just hope the Mets don't do it. I know that the Mets have been one of those teams that everyone's saying, oh yeah, they'll have interest in Trevor Bauer and stuff like that. I'm hoping that it's just because they see the money that the Mets are throwing around. But I don't, and I'm hoping that it's kind of just that. You know, I know we try to keep this a general podcast, but of course we are Mets fans. I hope that they aren't the ones that say, oh hey, let's go after him, you know.
Yeah, and I obviously definitely don't hope that either, but also I have to recognize the reality, and that they pretty much almost signed him when the Dodgers did. And of course, before he signed with the Dodgers was before these allegations came out and this whole story came out, but he was also still an asshole then. He still was not a very good person then, was still somebody that would leverage his online clout and his online fan bases to attack other people online, and in many cases women online, And that was also something that I just didn't, I didn't vibe with, I didn't get with. And, you know, the Mets, Bob Nightingale reported it. They basically had him signed. And then he either backed out of it or just wasn't there and then signed with the Dodgers. But yeah, so I think that's it. Like I said, I hope he never throws another pitch in the major leagues. I hope that teams are with me on that. And I hope that teams listen to the players. Because by a lot of accounts and some of the reporting I've seen, it did seem like the players were uncomfortable with that. And I give baseball players a lot of credit on that. You know, baseball culturally is not necessarily a sport that is seen as super progressive. And, you know, the people that play it are not often seen as super progressive. And I'm not even saying it's a super progressive thing, because it should be pretty obvious that, you know, if you do these kinds of things to women, if you do the kind of things that were on some of these reports that we saw to women, you just shouldn't be respected. And that shouldn't be like a, it's obviously like the bare minimum to say, like, yeah, you shouldn't have to deal with that guy. But it's kind of shitty that you have to hold athletes to that standard. But it was something that I thought was good that some players, you know, I think voiced their concerns with the Dodgers higher ups to say, like, no, I don't want to be around this guy. And I hope that there are teams across the league that their players go to their ownerships and say, like, yeah, I know you guys are looking at that. I don't want that to happen. I don't want to share a locker room with this guy. But yeah, so I think that will do it on our Trevor Bauer talk, which, so just talked about a lot of bad stuff, a lot of stuff I don't want to talk about. Now we can talk about some good stuff. The Red Sox did something. They did something really good, really cool and good. They re-signed Rafael Devers, their third baseman of the future, of the now, of the past, of the present. 11 years, $331 million deal. I feel like it's a great deal. I think that a lot of people have mentioned it. The third base market is kind of, probably has a lot of guys, you know, punching at the air right now. Because Nolan Arenado opted into his deal when he could have opted out, hit free agency. In a pretty light third baseman market, aside from Rafael Devers' extension talks, he could have hit the market and got crazy money. Austin Riley recently signed, I think it was like a 12-year, $221 million deal, which is pretty good. But, I mean, you could probably say that Austin Riley and Rafael Devers are in similar tier of third baseman, if not probably the same A-tier, S-tier level of third baseman. And that's a lot of difference with the same amount of years, basically. But then again, it's also the Braves we're talking about with that. But yeah, I think that this is a really good deal. And I think that it kind of spells the kind of money he made. San Diego's probably not too happy, because now they know that Manny Machado is probably definitely going to opt out and become a free agent next year to kind of seek this level of deal again.
Yeah, no, it's definitely going to be something along those lines. Like you said, I think that this is actually one of those kind of rare, really good for both sides deals. You know, this is a lot of money, obviously, for the Red Sox to give up, but I think that that Devers is a worthy player of a contract of this caliber. I think his skill set, especially in that park, you know, being a lefty, really plays him out to work well in Fenway. And then on top of that, probably Devers's big question mark is his glove, and his glove has been pretty decent in the past few years, you know, at least serviceable, to the point where, you know, he can kind of mold into their next DH, you know, in the next few years and stuff like that, if they get someone kind of up in the ranks in the third base mark. So I really do think that, you know, this is going to play well in an aging contract for Devers. I think, you know, like I said, it works well for the Red Sox in that regard. And I think the biggest loser in all of this is, I really like what you bring up with the San Diego Padres there, because they are probably going to see Machado kind of leave there. But I really do think it's just, maybe it's my Braves hate, but it is that Austin Riley contract there. Just because it is another one where it's like, he's making probably, we see this number now, about $100 million less than what he's like probably worth. I really do think that he is in that same kind of at least tiered caliber. I think when you look at the numbers, they're both very similar players. I think Riley probably gives you a little bit more with the glove. Devers gives you a smidge more with the bat. But because I'm a Mets fan, Austin Riley's one of those players that has like a 9 million OB, like OPS against us and stuff like that. So I think that Austin Riley is probably like the next Barry Bonds or something. But yeah, it's just one of those things where Austin Riley really could have made this type of money, but instead took that hometown contract and donated some of his money to the Atlanta Braves Foundation. So
that'd be kind of funny if the Red Sox had, like, after they didn't sign Bogarts and Betts, they were like, they signed Raffy to this deal and then also made the Red Sox Foundation, Red Sox Kid Nation. They made him make a donation to that, and that's why Bogarts and Betts didn't want to sign, because they had some stipulation in there that they had to donate to Red Sox Kid Nation. Shout out Red Sox Kid Nation. I would never have met Manny Del Carmen if not for that. Sorry to spoil a potential future members, guys. But yeah, I just looked it up just because I thought I had my numbers wrong, and I did. So Austin Riley's deal is actually 10 years, $212 million. So
that's what I mean. It's the same.
It's a year. So
that's even worse.
Devers' contract. Yeah, Devers' contract is a year longer, and let's see. I said 212, right?
Yeah.
A year and about $119 million less.
Sorry, I'm just thinking about someone signing a 1 year, $119 million contract.
That's like a soccer deal. I'm pretty sure Cristiano Ronaldo just signed it with that Saudi Arabian team.
Yeah, he got his own oil rig too.
Yeah, and he got them to bend their rules on not letting married couples live together. Which, small aside, if I'm his girlfriend, I'd be so pissed. Like you wouldn't just even like fake marry me, just to get in there.
You'd be like, hey, so about this.
But regardless of that. So what I was gonna say kind of about the Devers deal on a whole is, you know, obviously phenomenal player, one of their better homegrown talents. I mean, they've had a lot of great homegrown talents, but he's up there obviously with Bogarts and Betts and stuff like that. Just, you know, a pretty consistent high 800s, low 900s OPS kind of guy. The last 2 years has really shown out with the power, hit 38 home runs in 2021. Didn't play as much, missed about 20 or so games this year, but still hit 27 home runs, you know, around the top 10, hanging around the top 10 in MVP voting a couple times, multiple time All-Star. Just a really high quality talent. I don't think that he, obviously this doesn't fix the Red Sox for this year, because he was going to be on the Red Sox this year regardless. But it definitely saves them from a lot of the despair that could have happened in the future if they didn't re-sign him, because now you're at least working with something. You're working with telling free agents, like, we already have a cornerstone here. Now we're just starting to build the other pieces to try to build that back up. And I think they made a lot of pretty solid ancillary moves around with you know, people like Masataka Yoshida. I like Justin Turner for them. I think he's just kind of, whereas in the second half of the year, JD Martinez kind of fell off with his bat speed and power, Justin Turner kind of refound it even in his age in the second year half of the year. So he really got to that level again. So I like that move for them. I like a lot of the moves they made around the bullpen with Kenley Jansen and Chris Martin. I still think that their starting rotation leaves a little bit to be desired. I think now you're probably going to have Garrett Whitlock in there, and you know, there's also Brian Bello, who's going to be entering his second year, showed a lot of promise in the last month of the season, and in general has just been a pretty good prospect for a little bit. But I mean, still there's question marks around Chris Sale and his health. I mean, at some point James Paxton is probably going to be in your starting five, and I don't know if he's thrown a pitch in the last 2 years. I forgot who else. Nick Pivetta, who I just think is a solid guy, but he's probably best off if you're in a playoff team, if he's like your four or five. So, you know, I still think that there's question marks around the Sox team, especially for this upcoming year. But, you know, obviously you can't get three top tier homegrown guys in Betts, Bogarts, and Devers and just let all of them leave after their 6 years. You just can't. Well, I mean, Bogarts was there for a little bit longer. They had another extension in between that, but you get what I mean. Like, you can't let all of them go at this point in free agency and trading and stuff like that. So to at least get one of them re-signed, I think shows at least some level of commitment or not wanting things to get too bad. That I think is definitely just good for Sox fans in general.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. I think that it's kind of a move where you kind of make it to kind of satiate the fan base for a year. And then you kind of probably gonna finish in third place, fourth place in the AL East this year. And then you say, yeah, you know, next year free agency comes along. And like you just said, that it allows the Red Sox to bring Devers into a contract negotiation with a free agent and say, hey, you know, this is our, like you said, this is our cornerstone guy. This is the guy who's going to show you around Boston. He's going to show you like what it is to be a player for the Red Sox and stuff, you know. Granted, like you said, you could have done that with Betts. You could have done that with Bogarts. But you now have the opportunity to do that with Devers. And so it's just going to help the Red Sox in the future. I think this would have been a really interesting, thing if they didn't do that sign, because who then do you use to bring in eight free agents and stuff like that? So, I do think that this is a good play in that regard, but what that means is that they have to then do extra stuff for it, you know, to really make this move worth it. This cannot be, you know, the only thing that they do. If they want to see a World Series in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years or the length of the Devers contract, they're going to have to build something around him. So,
yeah, and next year's free agency is a little weak on the hitting. You know, obviously, like we said, Manny Machado is probably going to opt out, but he's a third baseman. As evidence, you don't need that anymore, but it will have guys probably like Juan Soto and Shohei Ohtani going to be entering that free agency. So who knows, they could be going after one of those big two. And if you get one of them to pair up with Devers, I feel like, you know, that's pretty solid building block to go with him. And I will say just a super corny reason that I like when people get re-signed for a long time is that you can just feel comfortable getting a jersey, like getting a Rafael Devers jersey for, you know, getting one for your kid, getting one for your partner, getting one for yourself. You can feel comfortable when Christmas comes around and you tell your mom, I would like a Red Sox jersey. You can feel comfortable that you can get a Rafael Devers jersey and, you know, she can get that and know that he's going to be on the team for a while and, you know, not get you the jersey of somebody that got traded like 2 days before Christmas. I remember when Josh Bell got traded, watching some kid get his gift given to him early, and it was a Josh Bell Pirates shirt, and I just felt so sad for the kid. But yeah, like I said, super corny, but it's just like, it's a piece of goodwill that you can go out and support your team, and you can know that person's going to be there for longer than a year, so that jersey's going to have some shelf life.
Yep, exactly. Gotta love it.
Speaking about jerseys with not a long shelf life, how's your Carlos Correa Giants jersey, or better yet, your Carlos Correa Mets jersey doing?
Dude, I don't even know how. This is one of those topics where I think that we can spend, you know, the rest of the half hour of the podcast talking about this, or we can spend the next 2 minutes, and neither of us will get to any type of conclusion. I don't know what the hell is going on here. I don't know.
So first off, he signs, if I remember correctly, it was 13 years, 345 mil with the Giants. I thought it was a good deal. The Giants needed something after missing out on Aaron Judge and making some decent supplementary moves, but they needed to, you know, splash on something here. to really kind of put themselves back in the conversation with the Dodgers and Padres, and I really felt like they had it. And I mean, like, Carlos Correa was literally getting dressed for his introductory press conference, and then they said it was getting postponed, so at first I was just like, you know, maybe he got to, like, the hotel late, and they need to postpone it for travel reasons. That sometimes happens. But then stuff starts coming out about how they're, you know, wary about the physicals, and then I'm thinking, well, why would you schedule a press conference if you were still not even sure about the physicals and not sure whether or not you were going to make it official or not? And then all of a sudden, you know, I go to bed thinking that, like, okay, they're probably just going to renegotiate and it's whatever, it's going to be fine. And then I wake up in the morning and he's a Met. And then I'm like, okay? Like, I saw that it was tweeted, you sent out a message, I was tagged in my group chat, and I was like, what? Okay, alright, he's Met now, that's so awesome. And I was over the moon, I was elated, I was listening to podcasts talking about it. You know, I was just like jumping for joy. Steve Cohen literally made public comments about it after it was pending, and then Christmas Eve hits, the story breaks that they're worried about the physicals, and then I go through the same thing that I'm sure Giants fans went through, that's like, okay, alright, this isn't gonna happen, this can't happen again. And then it feels like we've just gotten slow drip feeds of, like, little tiny pieces of information that don't feel too important. And then the most recent reporting is that the Mets seem frustrated, they're considering walking away, and the Correa camp has been in touch with multiple teams. So, I don't know. I feel like this ends with either him being back on the Twins or on the Mets, but it's just, like, this has to be one of the more unprecedented free agency situations in league history, to me.
Yeah, at the very least, this is one of those, because we're so, you know, tapped online, and that I think this is kind of one of those things where I feel like an ass. I totally forget who this was in the most recent years, but because of the whole Twitter and trying to break news first, there was a lot of guys that were broken about them being to one team, and that just wasn't the case. You know, well, that just wasn't happening. Yeah, exactly. The whole, like, Bob Nightingale thing and stuff. You know, and so it kind of makes Twitter a really interesting place, because we need Twitter for these types of news stories, you know, but you can really only trust, like, maybe one or two people on that website when it comes to breaking news, or maybe Carlos Baerga, who knows. It's just one of those things where it's like, you don't really know who you can trust. You don't really know what type of information's out there. And then you also don't know what actually that information is, you know. It reminds me of when the text message or emails got leaked between, was it the Diamondbacks and the Cardinals, or Astros and Cardinals? What was it?
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah. And I think the Cardinals got punished over this, like, pretty recently.
Yeah, within the last year or two. And something along those lines. And a lot of those emails were like, hey, you know, do you want to trade this guy for this, like, crazy package? And that kind of bled into, you know, making me think, like, oh, when they're tweeting that, oh, the Cardinals are interested in this player, and it's just like this, like, really dumb contract, it makes me think of, like, fantasy baseball when I say, hey, DJ, can you trade me this player, and I'm just gonna offer you a shit deal. And, like, Chris Lopes is interested in this player, you know. I just don't understand what Twitter is. What I do find interesting, and I did my investigative journalism here on this one, is looking at a one Stephen Cohen's likes on Twitter. And a lot of them in the last day or so, probably I would say a good 10 of them, are Mets fans saying that regardless of what happens with Correa, where we still had a really good offseason and we're still a really good team.
Oh, he's throwing in the towel.
So he has a few likes like that. I think like the big thing that's really interesting to me about this whole situation is we still don't really know what these medicals are, and obviously HIPAA and everything like that. Like, we're probably never really going to know what the medicals actually say. There's probably a reason why the Mets couldn't just use the medicals that the Giants had and stuff like that. You know, I wonder if the Mets and the Giants have had conversations as to what their reservations are about this. Probably not. But I'm intrigued if they have. You know, it's just like the whole thing is that we just don't really know. It just sounds like it's something that concerns people on the longevity of this contract. And obviously Carlos Correa isn't going to be the one that wants to renege on something that, you know, is going to be years off the contract. What I do find interesting though is just like what, 2 days ago, Correa posts the picture of with the iHeart NY shirt and stuff like that. So it's like, that's what I'm trying to say, is that you just can't like believe or know anything that's happening with this situation.
Yeah, and sorry, I was looking up the Cardinals thing that you mentioned. So it wasn't something that was recent. It was actually in 2016. And the reason that I wanted to bring it up was because the person that pled guilty to unauthorized access, and I believe so, it was a data breach first reported in June 2014 when Astros general manager Jeff Luhnow told reporters that the team had been the victim of hackers who had gained access to servers and published online months of internal trade talks. So the person who hacked these computers and was pled guilty, his name, Christopher Correa.
Nice.
So I just thought that was funny to mention. But yeah, so I think the whole thing was that he had a surgery, I want to say on his right ankle. Some articles just say surgically repaired lower right leg, like the Athletic article I just had pulled up. I believe it was an ankle injury that I think I saw was like in 2014 or something like that. So I do agree with you that I think it's literally just in the longevity of the deal rather than actually signing it, because if it was a real concern, the Twins probably would have cared a little bit more about the 3-year deal that they gave him last year. But also, I think that another thing that if you're one of these other teams, why you shouldn't maybe think about it too much, or maybe why you should wonder what the Twins are thinking, because the Twins did offer him around 11 or 12 years as well, and they've clearly seen the medicals, they employ him. So I wonder, maybe the Twins just suck at this whole medical thing, and that's why they keep seeing it, and it's like, no, we see it's completely fine. Meanwhile, he's like, has like two rusty staples connecting his ankle ligaments together.
Nah, the Mayo Clinic's out there in Minnesota, so... so they'll be good. That's why they're totally fine with it. They have like a secret edge.
But yeah, so like I said, I feel like this either ends with him signing with the Mets on maybe not even too much of a change deal. I think it'll just have increased stipulations and contract stuff about like, okay, if you play at any point in this contract less than, like, 80 games in a year, you know, we can either terminate the contract or pay you at a lower rate, or, you know, just a lot of games play thresholds for certain amounts of money, and stuff like that. So, I think it's either going to have that, or he's just going to return back to the Twins. Because at this point, if you hit free agency back for a third time, I mean, I thought that kind of the funny joke would have been if he just kept signing, taking off year and year and year deals until he signs with like the Oakland A's for like a 2-year $50 million deal. He just like has to keep taking down offer after offer after offer after they see his medicals. Or like these teams going in and signing him like, oh please, the medicals can't be that bad. And then they look at it and then they're like, whoa.
What if he's just doing it for like the free dinners that you get when you're like getting courted? Like, he just likes getting courted, so he's just getting free dinners out of this.
I don't know what San Francisco does well with food, but I know that New York City is a pretty good food. That would be pretty funny. Like, he takes a meeting with the Rangers just because he wants to get some barbecue. You're like, why the hell is he meeting with the royals right now? He's just at a spot getting like brisket. that would actually be pretty funny, but yeah, like it's just like a super confounding situation. And personally, like, I don't really care about the medicals. I don't care what this deal is going to look like in the last 4 to 5 years of this contract. I am under the guise that you're signing this contract because you're going to get this level of Carlos Correa for the next 5 or 6 years, and that's going to turn you immediately into a contender. Like, I think that this Mets team is still very, very good and potentially a World Series contender this year, but I still think that the offense has question marks, and it hasn't been changed, I think, at all this offseason. I don't recall any super major offensive moves happening other than, like, signing... what was his name? The catcher from Milwaukee.
Omar Narvaez.
Other than signing him, I don't think that there was any big deals on the offensive end. So, I mean, this was the deal that was going to kind of fix a lot of things for this team. It was going to make offense a little bit easier on guys like Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso. It was going to make stuff easier on Francisco in that he could probably take days off and Carlos could play shortstop. It was going to make stuff easier on Carlos in that it was not as physically demanding, and there was some report about him being welcoming about making the switch to third because he could bulk up a little bit more, which would help him stay healthy and also help him just become more of a power guy. So I don't know. I just take a look at it and, like, I truly could not care less about what happens in the last 4 or 5 years of this deal. I think that you want to win a World Series, and especially with guys like Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander, who aren't going to be there in 6 years on your roster, you want to be able to win it now. And if you want to win it now, you should want to have a guy like Carlos Correa on that roster batting like fourth or fifth.
Yeah, some of our best prospects are on the left side of the infield. So, you know, it's like you're just saying, it's one of those things where this isn't a move for 10 years from now. This is a move for 2 years this year. You know, this is a move for to win the World Series in 2023. And, you know, like, that's what, like, this move is.
Unless you're getting who Eduardo Escobar was in September, unless you're getting that for like 3 or 4 months in the season, it's just not like, unless you're getting that production, I think there's like just one or too many two holes in this lineup for to be like a true contender. So I don't know. I think that I'm still high on this Mets team. I'm still very up on them and their chances as contenders and people to finish top in the NL East. But if it's without Carlos Correa, I do think that their chances of winning an actual championship do take a major hit. And obviously that's not a hot take to say, but I think it's definitely true that if you look at this lineup without Carlos Correa, I don't know if you see necessarily a World Series contender.
Yeah. To me, Correa is a Met until he's not, you know, even though he never actually was. But Correa is a Met until he's not.
And, he could still be a Giant.
He could still be a Giant. Who knows? That would be awesome.
he just goes back.
The chaos agent in me doesn't really care what happens because I love to see either he's on the Mets or this is just like such a crazy fucking thing that happens. And this is awesome to see. So, like, I'm totally fine either way. But I obviously, in an actual baseball sense, like you just said, we almost need Correa on this team to make that type of impact. And so like I really do want to see it work out in this favor. And also, not to mention, and a lot of people have brought this up, the Mets are probably waiting on making a lot of different moves once this Correa news comes one way or the other, you know. The Mets have a lot of pieces that they can move around in the trade market, and especially if Correa signs a long-term deal, you're going to offload one or two of those prospects that are like those left-side prospects that I was saying. So the Mets in their best interest to make this deal. So I don't know. I think if I have my prediction, I think you see him on the Mets. I think that they get this deal done. I think that the Mets seem like they are just kind of squabbling on a few different year pieces, and Correa, like you said, doesn't want those stipulations in there. But I think if they're just on the stipulations conversations, then then that's something that can get worked out. But who knows, you know?
And a couple of final pieces. I that's why I mentioned the stuff in the Devers part about the third base market and kind of what's going on with it, because, I mean, you know, if this falls through, they don't have a ton of options to look for in terms of trying to trade for a third baseman. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, as far as all of the top tier guys, as we just mentioned, Devers is re-signed, Arenado's re-signed, Austin Riley's re-signed. I mean, obviously you were never going to trade for Austin Riley, but, you know, you wouldn't trade for Manny Machado if you could just sign him after he opts out. So, and at that point, you would also, once again, want him for this year, so that kind of defeats the purpose, and I'm just thinking around, and there's not too many other people. I always thought that if this fell through and Devers wasn't re-signed, they were going to go hard on trying to trade for him and just kind of giving whatever they could to get Devers, but obviously that's no longer the option, so I think that they should probably recognize kind of the urgency of the situation and continue to go after it. But another thing that I wanted to mention is that I did tweet about this. I kind of just want there to not be any more news about it until spring training, and then just whatever jersey he's wearing when he pulls up to a spring training facility, that's where he signed. And, like, I'm trying to think about how free agency would have worked if it existed in, like, the 1920s, where, like, you know, you're just going about your day, and then you go to the ballpark after a long day in the mines, and all of a sudden Honus Wagner's not playing for your team anymore. And then you just see that he was randomly traded. He was randomly signed with the Yankees, or
tell season ticket holders
exactly. But yeah, I think that honestly would have went hard. I think that as much as I love all the rumors and stuff like that, I think it would just be funny to just show up at spring training one day and it's like, Justin Verlander's a Met.
That would be pretty funny.
I think that does it with all of our main things. We're going to go to, once again, our time-honored tradition of Remember That Guy. So, Chris, I bring to you, who do you have for this week's rendition of Remembering That Guy?
All right, so I don't want to say any names off of the First Baseball Reference page because I don't know if you did that as well. Or at least, I guess I should ask, did you look at the Baseball Reference page for your person today?
I started to go that route and then remembered something else and went off of it.
Okay, sounds good. So, on that page today was a one Clay Buchholz, and this is not my person. But I saw Clay, and I was just like, wow, this is actually pretty funny. He is a pretty good, like, Remember That Guy. But then I realized, like, he's actually, you know, like, pretty decent for a few years, had to have this thing. So I kind of dove into that kind of Red Sox pitcher's situation, and I found, one of my favorite Red Sox pitchers, Tim Wakefield. Love Tim Wakefield. Who doesn't love a knuckleballer? I think everyone does love a knuckleballer. And the best thing about Tim Wakefield was when you look at his statistics, he was never actually, like, that good. He just pitched a lot, ate a lot of innings, and was out there, but his, like, median ERA was, like, a 4. Like, his career FIP is 4.72. So he's wasn't really that good. And whatnot. I'm trying to find WAR numbers or anything like that. Career WAR is 34. And he had a 19-year-long career. So he not great, but he did make an All-Star, one All-Star appearance in his age 42 year. So I feel like Tim Wakefield really just kind of encapsulates that. Remember those guys, even though he's a pretty newer one, I guess, probably within the last 10 years now. But, you know, knuckleballer, probably one of the last knuckleballers that we'll ever see. You know, I think the only other one, we had R.A. Dickey, obviously, but, Mickey Janis or whatever. Yeah. The only reason I even know his name is because of MLB The Show.
Mickey was the most recent one.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think Knuckleball is probably a pitch that you may never see again, just based off of the skill sets of pitchers that people are looking for nowadays. Or you're only going to see like knuckleballers in 10 years. That would be
so fun. now that we're kind of cracking down on spin rates and teams might not be looking so much at it, we could undergo a knuckleball renaissance.
Yeah, we just go zero spin rate. Who can throw 60?
That was my favorite thing about Mickey Janis's MLB debut is that he did get checked for sticky stuff in between innings.
That's awesome. But yeah, no, I don't know. That's kind of my remember that guy.
No, I think that this is a great pick. He's just like your classic 2000s middle to back end of the rotation guy. You know, all those guys kind of had a little bit of a quirk. They weren't guys that were going to have like numbers that were going to blow you away, but they're guys that you remember, obviously. And yeah, I mean, I love a guy who starts out at one position. I believe he was a shortstop as a prospect. And then I think when he came up with the Pirates for his first time, I don't remember him being like a knuckleballer. And then he leaves, comes back, reinvents himself as a knuckleballer, and then squeaks out a 16-year career after that. So I think that's pretty remarkable. I love stuff like that. So yeah, I think that's a really good pick. My pick is going to be, like I said, I was looking through, I was trying to go through the page. I started looking at Dan Uggla, who I'm only comfortable about saying this because upon looking at his stats, I think he's actually a little bit too good for this category. Like, I thought that he fizzled out a lot quicker than he did, but he was actually really, really solid and like a four-time All-Star for a while there. So the option I am going with is mainly because I don't even really remember him too much as a player, which is funny for the sake of this, but I remember him based on two kind of memes that came out about him that people have ragged on. My pick is Jason Marquis. And I pick him, so first of all, a decently long career, 14, 15 years, pitched for the Atlanta Braves, St. Louis Cardinals, Chicago Cubs, Rockies, Nationals, Diamondbacks, I actually, as I was starting to say that, I didn't realize how many teams he was on. Holy shit, he was on a lot of teams. Twins, Padres, and Reds. The reason that I was thinking about him was, A, there was a great hype video that the Nationals put up when they signed him in free agency after his All-Star year in Colorado, where it was the whole commercial was like, he could have went anywhere. He could have went to Philadelphia. He was the leader in wins. He could have stayed in Colorado where he was an All-Star. He pitched over 200 innings. He could have went to New York. And then one of the options was like, he could have went to Philadelphia for what? A cheesesteak? But he chose Washington. He chose the Nationals. And then in his time with the Nationals, let's see.
Didn't do good.
Yeah, in his age 31, 2010 season with the Nationals, 13 starts to the tune of a 6.6 ERA. And then in his 2011 season with the Nationals, a little bit better, 3.95 ERA in 20 starts, but was traded to the Arizona Diamondbacks. So pretty short stint there in Washington after he could have went anywhere. And then he went to Arizona. And then the other one that I was going to mention is one of my favorite traditions of the Little League World Series is when before the games, when they're announcing the lineups, they have every kid announce their names and get to say their favorite player. And I always remember loving this tradition because when I was a kid playing Little League Baseball and I dreamed about playing in the Little League Baseball World Series, this is like the one thing I always wanted to do is be able to be in that like introductory thing where I'm saying like, hey, my name is DJ Lopes and my favorite player is, I don't know, I probably would have made something up to make me sound like a cool and educated guy. Like I don't know. I probably would have said like my favorite player is Mike Lowell. But so one team, it was the team that Jason Marquis played for, South Shore Little League All-Stars in Staten Island. pretty much everybody on the team named Jason Marquis as their favorite player. And it's just a funny thing where, like, in 2009, you're probably getting everybody's favorite player. They're saying, like, you know, my favorite player is Albert Pujols. My favorite player is Derek Jeter. My favorite player is David Ortiz. And then you just get four or five kids in thick-ass New York accents going, like, my favorite player is Jason Marquis. It was just super funny. And I just, like, at first I thought about that he could have went anywhere, but he came back here. And then I was like, but wait, wasn't he also that guy that, like, the random pitcher that everybody on the Little League team loved? And then, yeah, turns out he was. There was another Little League team that was like that had just some, like, role player that was from that Little League, so they all chose him. I don't remember who it was, but, yeah, that's my pick, Jason Marquis. Not a player I know anything about. I don't think I've ever seen Jason Marquis pitch. Like, not once.
I remember those middle of the years, especially with the Cubs and Braves for whatever reason, and it definitely was a good pitcher. I think he fits this mold pretty well. What I do find really interesting, and the only thing I'm really going to say about this, is that on a December 13th, 2003, he was traded by the Atlanta Braves to the St. Louis Cardinals for J.D. Drew and Eli Marrero. But the most interesting piece of this trade to me is that this is the trade that sent a one Adam Wainwright to the St. Louis Cardinals.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he was traded. I forgot he was drafted by the Braves.
Yeah, Wainwright's just been, like, such a stalwart, obviously, for St. Louis that I didn't even know that he was ever in cahoots with any other team. Obviously, you know, he never played a game for any other major league team, but it seemed that it just is interesting to me that he's just kind of randomly tacked on in this Jason Marquis trade, and he's kind of been just the guy in St. Louis for so long. So,
yeah, I think that baseball is probably the best sport to do, like, the if everybody returned to the team they were drafted by, how would these teams look? Because, I mean, you know, with all these other sports, they get drafted by the team, and then pretty much almost immediately they're on that team. So, like, you've seen them play for that team, but, like, obviously, unless you mention it to somebody, you would have never even, or, like, knew beforehand, you would have never even thought that Adam Wainwright was even a member of the Braves. But because of just how people moved around and how prospects moved around in trades and stuff like that, it's just natural that in the 4 or 5 years you spend in the minors, you're probably not going to be with the same organization. So I always thought that was really cool. Like, Fernando Tatis Jr., he was not drafted by the Padres. He was a White Sox, which maybe we'll litigate that trade at some point. But yeah, so I think that that's actually really cool. I think that might be something fun to do. I don't know how we could turn that into an episode. But something about that, just like players that were not on the team, that were drafted not by a team you think they were drafted by.
Yeah, that would be a good one. Although we did just kind of, I think, blow our load right there. I probably shouldn't say that, but with Fernando Tatis for James Shields.
Oh, God. You could probably do an hour on that trade. But yeah, so I think that does it for this episode of Ball 5. Chris, do you have any parting thoughts?
No, I just think, you know, let's keep our ears to the ground for A1 Carlos Correa.
When he signs with the, I think it's the KeyBank SoftHawks, whatever team Kodai Senga was on before he came over. When he signs overseas, that'll shake the room. But yeah. So, once again, we hope you enjoyed listening. Hopefully, we're going to be back on a more, strict schedule. Obviously, Chris is going to be awake for these later recording times, because he's got another person that actually requires it rather than just talking baseball. So, we should be available for recording. But yeah, hopefully we can stick around with this, keep it going. And once again, hope you guys enjoyed, and stay safe out there. Hope you have a good one.
Yeah, peace out.